And this is Ken Kratzer for Sons of the American Legion Radio and WVOX in New Rochelle, New York. We have a chance to talk with a member of Congress today, Paul Tonko from upstate New York, the 20th Congressional District. Congressman, how are you today?
I'm doing well, Ken. It's great to join you and your listeners at VOX.
Our pleasure. Now, you served many years, 25 years in New York State Assembly, probably with some of our friends Amy Poehlin and Ron Tocci.
Absolutely.
From this area. And then you recently were elected to Congress in the seat held by Kirsten Gillibrand. Just tell us a little bit about your career so far and why you've decided to spend your career in public service.
Well, you know, it's interesting because as an engineer, I thought I brought a certain perspective to the table, a technical, analytical approach to problem solving. And as we get more and more into some of these very complex issues, I'm convinced that that is the case. And so through energy expertise that I've developed through the State Assembly, where I served as chair for 15 years of the New York State Assembly Energy Committee, to my work as president and CEO of NYSERDA, New York State Energy Research and Development Authority, I've been able now to transfer that into the science and tech committee assignments that I had my first two terms in Congress, and now in a critical way, to the Energy and Commerce Committee that I serve on in my third term here in Washington.
Well, that's terrific. And today we'd like to talk a little bit about, or start off at least, with what's happening in Washington. As you know, in our show, we cover the military and veterans issues primarily. And the sequester impact, the cuts, I mean, it seems like it's off the national debate stage, but we're hearing a lot of comments from our friends in the military and also in the Department of Defense civilian workers. I was at West Point last week where they were talking a lot about the cuts that they know that they're having to implement that affect training and operations. We actually have a good friend who's a command master chief on the USS Harry Truman, whose deployment was delayed by 4 months this year. What are your thoughts on the impact of the sequester that you're seeing here and also from the Washington perspective?
Sure. Well, let me take this one right back to the humble beginnings of sequestration, where at that time I said it's a mindless, thoughtless exercise and ought not be included in the budget work we do. It is the best way across the board cuts, which is all about sequestration, equal treatment across the board cuts, are, again, mindless and thoughtless. It's the best way to keep a bad program alive, and it's the worst way to sacrifice a very good program. And so I thought that, you know, we needed to take a scalpel to the process, not, you know, wield a cleaver. And I am really concerned. As an engineer, I like getting analytical about how to belt tighten, rid us of waste and inefficiency, outmoded programs, and then invest where we must after we cut where we can. And so I've now witnessed what the delayed effect has been with sequestration. And we did it again with a continuing resolution in the House that formalized the concept. So at both junctures, at the onset with the Budget Control Act, I voted no because of sequestration, then voted against it again when it was used in a continuing resolution. But let me personalize it to my district. The Watervliet Arsenal, which is in Albany County that I represent in the Capital Region of New York, they have ably served and supplied our military since 1813, Ken.
Absolutely.
Today, they have 600 proud employees that make cannons and other essential equipment for our troops serving in Afghanistan and beyond. So their assignments, their mission, their contracts are indeed critical to our nation's military well and their well-being. In April, I joined with over 100 Arsenal employees who gave up their lunch break, Ken, so as to speak out against the furloughs affecting the arsenal as a result of the sequester, that was the furlough that was to come. A furlough at the arsenal is A, dangerous to our military preparedness, B, unfair to our workers, but then C, a devastating blow to our local economy. And when you amass these local economies from coast to coast, it sets us back by some 750,000 jobs. Consider this. The average salary, Ken, for an Arsenal employee is about $45,000. With an 11-day furlough that takes out about $2,000 from the annual paycheck, that's $2,000 that doesn't go toward the purchase of a new car, so auto dealers suffer. It's $2,000 not spent on new clothing or furniture, so retailers suffer. It's $2,000 not spent at a local restaurant, so waiters and waitresses suffer. You know, it's a
Absolutely.
Ripple effect beyond belief. And, you know, these are not the extravagant purchases of a professional athlete or Wall Street wizard. These are the basic purchases of average middle-income community New Yorkers. So when 600 employees at the Arsenal that I represent are not putting that extra $2,000 toward those very basic and very reasonable purchases, our entire local economy suffers. And again, as you look at the complement across the state of New York and other regions, the entire state economy is impacted. So our local economy stands to lose $1.2 million from Arsenal furloughs alone. So it's a mindless, thoughtless exercise that ought to be addressed. And the best way to do it is to do a bold and balanced plan called a budget. The House, the Senate, the President have all introduced budgets. The houses have passed their budgets. Bring us to the table. I've called on, through several efforts here on naming the conferees. I've asked the Speaker of the House of Representatives to name the conferees so that we can do additional revenues, make the belt-tightening measures that we need to make, invest where we must, and cut where we can so that we can go forward and cut our deficit at the same time. Go forward and do the most logical, comprehensive, analytical approach that is called for. That's good government. That's effective government. That's efficient government. Not this pell-mell across-the-board cut with sequestration.
Well, absolutely. We're hearing a lot of concern from people in the military who are supported by Department of Defense civilians who now, for the summer, are only going to work 4 days a week. And they still have full-time requirements supporting those in the military. So that's really having an impact. We're hearing that more and more from our contacts in the military itself.
Yeah. No, and again, these people have assigned responsibilities, assigned duties. I know that, again, back to the Waterbleed Arsenal, because these contracts have to be met for the troops in Afghanistan, they're bringing on overtime employees on weekends, and that has caused morale to drop because some have been called in, others haven't. So while you're cutting the pay of some, you're now adding to the pay of others in an overtime scenario, which is sheer foolishness. So it's going to cost the system rather than save the system.
And we're talking with Congressman Paul D. Tonko from New York's 20th Congressional District. And Congressman, yesterday the Pentagon made a statement expressing concern that in the future either troop numbers or weapons development might have to be cut because of sequestration. Our national commander, James E. Coots from the American Legion, made a comment, we cannot forfeit our national security at time of war against terrorism, and our national security depends on superior weapons as well as enough troops to operate them. That's on the front page of the American Legion
yeah.
national website today. What's your thought on that issue of about how do we have enough troops, especially when we all know that the experience of troops, having the people that have 10 to 20 years experience in the military is so vital?
Yeah, I share the sentiment exactly. Now, I'm concerned about having the appropriate level of investment in the equipment, in the protective gear, in all of the the high tech that can accompany our troops so that they're as safe as they can be. And I'm there for the numbers that we need. Total commitment to our troops and their well-being in this effort to defend our freedoms and those of people around the world. And beyond that, our troops are exhausted. They're in the midst of the longest war in our nation's history. They have been into so many conflicts and wars, defending us against the forces of terrorism, that they deserve our respect here to have the resources that will enable them to absorb this kind of drain on their numbers.
Congressman, I'd just like to ask you a little bit about your views on how the Department of Veterans Affairs is doing. A lot of issues this summer about the claims backlog, the
sure.
700,000 to 800,000 claims that are still pending from veterans. And I know you've done a lot of work on mental health care for both civilians and the military. What are your thoughts about what you see happening at the Department of Veterans Affairs?
Well, you know, it's obviously a serious issue that should have been resolved years ago. We have the capability, I believe, to digitize and streamline, Ken, just about anything in government. And we need to start with this claims backlog so that claims can be processed faster and more efficiently. I know through our district offices, some of the hottest activity we have is with veterans and their claims, their backlogs, because this is not a problem that happened overnight. It is not a problem that can be fixed overnight. So I plan to work with my colleagues to fight for legislation that empowers our VA to clear its backlog as quickly as possible. Now, the VA now receives and processes over 1 million claims every year, and those numbers continue to grow. Today, the VA's total claims inventory has dropped by more than 100,000, with some nearly 800,000 pending. Of that, over 500,000 cases are considered to be part of the backlog. So my office works and will continue to work each day to expedite these remaining cases that are located in my district. And I think we need to all embrace that sort of exercise from our own congressional district perspective, go after these backlogs, which we're intent on doing. And in terms of veterans afflicted with post-traumatic stress disorder or with mental health issues in whatever way, through illnesses or health disorders, we failed to get a jump start on both the diagnoses and treatments of post-traumatic stress disorder. And a number of mental health issues as they relate to our veterans are part of that also. Suicide in our military and veterans population is a growing phenomenon. And I believe that if we step up our game in treatment of post-traumatic stress disorder, we'll see those numbers go down. I am the prime sponsor. I fought for years to get mental health parity passed in the state of New York. It was one of my finest accomplishments, one of my last major efforts as a state assembly member. I will continue to do battle for appropriate numbers, resources for mental health treatment for our troops. They war does terrible things to people, and we need to be there for our veterans when they return home. They don't leave a battlefield, in my opinion, and come home to a new battlefield where they fight for housing and education and work treatment, health care that they require, including mental health. When suicide numbers surpass the battlefield numbers, the battlefield casualties, that's telling us something. It ought to send up a flag so that we respond and respond effectively. And I'll continue to lead that effort to make certain that mental health services are provided to our nation's military and veterans.
Congressman, all of us at the American Legion, all in the veterans community, appreciate your efforts on that vital effort to help our veterans. If I could, let me just ask you two more questions.
Sure.
Your predecessor, Senator Kirsten Gillibrand, has been a strong advocate for a change in how sexual abuse is handled in the military, how it's prosecuted. We've heard different things from people, whether we can rely on the chain of command as a way to administer discipline, or whether we need an alternate means for people in the military to report incidents of sexual abuse and to have that taken care of. What are your thoughts on this matter?
Well, you know, I've been working closely with Congresswoman Jackie Speier from California, who's very concerned about the same issue. And we have seen military sexual abuse cases being handled poorly and inappropriately from within the chain of command. So even if even one of these cases is mishandled, then that's too many. So Senator Gillibrand's legislation to take military sexual abuse cases out of the chain of command has received strong bipartisan support in her house. And I know that activity is taking hold here in the House of Representatives, and I will support those efforts because I will stand by a fair, equal, just treatment for all members of the military, women and men.
Absolutely. And, Congressman, just one more question for you, if we
sure.
might. And certainly this goes back to your days in the New York Assembly. The New York National Guard, we enjoy telling their story whenever we can. They did a great job at helping all of us here after Hurricane Sandy. And then again, just recently in July, in all the flooding near your district in the Mohawk Valley, the 4th of July, we talked to a colonel who was had 250 of his men and women working on the 4th of July to help relieve the flooding in the Mohawk Valley. What are your thoughts when you see the effort that the New York National Guard is providing both here in New York State and then also when they're sent on deployment overseas?
Right. You know, my thoughts about the National Guard is they are everyday heroes. with the efforts that they embrace, the mission of the Guard. When I have seen their response to flooding in our area, which recently affected Fort Plain in Montgomery County, my home county, that community is no longer in my district, but I had represented it for years. And I believe it's critical for Democrats and Republicans to work together to ensure that our friends and neighbors that are affected by severe weather receive the help they need, especially when they've lost everything for which they've ever worked. But right there, front and center, in the epicenter of the response, there is the National Guard. In fact, I will tell you that I know of a National Guardsman from my hometown in Amsterdam who went down to Long Island when Irene and Lee were forecasted. We got destroyed by that in 2011. But he went down to Long Island because the trajectory of the storm was forecasted to really do great damage on Long Island. It did damage, but in a sense, there was greater damage in upstate New York. When this guardsman returned from his service in protecting Long Island from the ravages of Irene and Lee, he came home to a totally flooded home along the waterfront in Amsterdam.
Wow.
Now, to me, there's the irony of it all. There's service beyond belief, and then you come home, and a situation you were trying to avoid for others gripped you in your own home setting. So, the courage, the bravery, the commitment, the patriotism of our Guard is undeniable, and I will always work hard to support our National Guard.
Absolutely. They do a great job. Congressman, just a quick thought. What's it like for you after serving in Albany in the New York State Assembly for so many years to now serve in Washington? What's the biggest difference that you see?
Well, I think there's a little more delegation by committee assignment. I'm on Energy and Commerce. I enjoy the role of ranker on the Environment and the Economy Subcommittee that reports the Energy and Commerce. So it's more assigned duties in that regard. And, of course, bigger issues that expand beyond the state borders and into the world situations. But, I like the legislative process. I like the interaction with colleagues. You get to meet many people from coast to coast that are involved in this same process. You learn a lot about your nation, and you see it from a personal perspective when you exchange with your colleagues. And I think my training in the New York State Assembly, I had always worked in a bicameral, bipartisan way, has been good, especially in these very difficult times where there seems to be a polarization beyond belief. I am doing my best to create those bridges that unite us rather than divide us and enable us to get things done at a time when our economy most needs us.
And Congressman Paul D. Tonko from the 20th District, Upstate New York, Troy, Albany, Saratoga Springs, thank you for joining us at Sons of the American Legion Radio, WVOX, and thank you for your service from all of us at the Sons of the American Legion and our parent organization, the American Legion.
Hey, my pleasure. I really respect the American Legions in my district. As a son of the American Legion, it's great to join you.
Pleasure. Thank you, sir.
Okay. Have a good day.
You too.